honorable, the most honorable, the most notable. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through. So tell me why you mad even. Your team gon' be sad leaving after matching up with Brad Stevens. East season, champion contenders. We drop twice a week like you tryna guard Kemba. Your team whack and your players whacker. I got the inside scoop after hanging up with Jay and Packer. Okay, we about chips here. I'm talking about this year, banner 12 plus 6 here. Carson Edwards top rookie, I'm seeing it now. Ain't playing around with Tatum and Hayward or Brown. We off the charts, but you gotta play it Marcus Smart. Close out, cause he pulling up from Harvey Yard. Gang green, it's no other way. So tune in to the pod if you plan on staying up today. You heard? Aziz. AJ, I see you, man.
Shit.
Welcome to
Anything Is Possible, the Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I'm joined, as always, by the kid, the god, Jay King, Celtics beat reporter for The Athletic, and we are coming to you live after the Celtics lose Game 6 and the Eastern Conference Finals to the Miami Heat. It turns out they just had no match for Heat culture. I'm going to put my hand up. I didn't think it was a thing.
You are now officially Jam Adebayo, son of Bam, grandson of Heat culture.
I got to get my body fat down. I got to start wearing pads to practice. I got to do everything that the Heat do. Because the Celtics just threw away another game. It really, like, it happened very, very quickly. They did a very good job of kind of getting themselves back into this game. Grant Williams entering the game, and the Celtics went on something like 22-8 run. They were up 96-90 with about 9 minutes to go. And then Bam decided, you know what, I'm going to play like Giannis Antetokounmpo and just drive and be an absolute monster and
crush motherfuckers.
And the Celtics, like, took the punch initially. Like, they kind of exchanged baskets. And then, like, the five-minute mark came. Spo took a timeout. You had a quick three from Duncan Robinson, then a nice pull-up from Tyler Hero. Then, boom, Brad takes a timeout. And then the Celtics just, like, it felt like didn't make a shot after that and did not even enter the paint after that. They shot, what, 2 of 14 from 3 in the fourth quarter. It felt like they felt the game slipping away, and their answer to it was to try and take more threes. Some of them were pretty good looks. Like, I thought Kemba got some good looks there, things he didn't knock down. I thought Tatum got some good looks. I mean, the reason they were actually in this game is because they were 11 for 23 in the first half from deep, and they were knocking down their threes, but then really went cold there, and it's I'm still kind of shocked about how quickly it all happened. It was like span of a couple minutes there. It went from feeling pretty good about game 7 to, wow, this is over.
Yeah, it went Bam dunk, Bam and one, Bam, there goes the Celtics season, just like that. another bad Bam punk. I'm gonna miss the bad Bam puns, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, I mean, the Celtics finally played defense early in the fourth quarter. Grant Williams was a big part of that. Jaylen Brown had a dynamite stretch where he went dunk, steal, layup. Celtics were up 6 in the fourth. All series long, they just couldn't close out games. They either won in a blowout or lost every time the game was close in the fourth quarter. They just couldn't handle the Heat down the stretch. I don't know whether it was fatigue. I don't know whether it was they just didn't mentally lock in well enough to execute down the stretch. But every fourth quarter, when it mattered, the Heat became unstoppable and the Celtics started settling for worse shots. That was the story of the series. It was the story of Game 6. And Bam Adebayo was an absolute menace. He totally took over the fourth. It wasn't really, for a while, anybody else. It was strictly Bam just crushing the Celtics. And he took the game from them. And obviously, that stretch killed the Celtics. But just as damning was their defense for the first three quarters was just
not good.
They gave up a lot of open threes, and I know Andre Iguodala hit 4 3-pointers.
He'll probably never do that again.
But there were a bunch of just bad defensive breakdowns by the Celtics, and that first half, you never would have known it was a closeout game for them, an elimination game for them, the way they played defense in the first half. And their offense was great for most of the game. They scored and scored and scored. They destroyed the Heat zone for most of the game until they went cold down the stretch. But their defense was bad all game long.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was an offensive battle in the first half, which is not something I thought we were going to see, especially after some of the ugly kind of early starts of the game we had. But it was both teams scored 60 points in the first half, and it was kind of this offensive battle. And they were able to step up and really slow down the Heat with going to that Grant lineup and when they went small. I mean, as good as my main man Danny Two Blocks was in game five, it felt like Tice just really struggled when he came back into the game. Basically, they had already given up. They were up 96-90, and then they had that kind of stretch where it's like Tyler Hero scored 5 points and then managed like 30 seconds, and it's like close game. Then you get Tice and Gordon come back into the game, and Tice he's never going to be able to keep up with Bam, and it just felt like the defensive intensity, other than that stretch to end the third and start the fourth, was just not there for the entire game. And the only thing that kept them in the game was their just kind of good three-point shooting, their offense. And the thing that's the problem with the Celtics is that they had the ability to go on runs, and they could answer the Heat within games, but it never felt like they had the ability to to draw on anything, or just to go to a consistent play on offense, or consistent anything. Like the Heat, it's just okay, give it to Bam and kind of let him play make. I don't know what the Celtics' go-to move was, and they certainly did not figure it out at any point when they were giving up a lead in game one of this series, when they're giving up a lead in game two of this series. Basically, in any of the losses, when it came time down to brass tacks, the Celtics did not have it.
The brass tacks.
Yeah.
They did not have the brass tacks. Where did that phrase come from?
That's a common phrase when it comes down to brass tacks. You know, it's put up or shut up. And the Celtics, their offense, for some reason, everyone watching would know, go to the paint, go attack the rim. They did some of that when they kind of kept it close. Tatum had some nice takes there where there's keeping it in the rim from the 90 to 100 range, where they're kind of exchanging buckets. And then it kind of slipped away from them, and it just kind of felt like panic mode with 4 minutes left to play. We just got to do nothing but chuck threes instead of they had nothing to rely on. They had no deposits in the bank of trust.
You're pulling out all the outrageous quotes tonight. I just thought Tice was really on his heels all night. Maybe it was because of foul trouble. He wasn't nearly as sharp as he had been in game five. I thought quietly he kind of dominated the second half of game five. He was
phenomenal in game five.
He was awesome. And then he picked up a bunch of pretty borderline cheapish fouls.
Two fouls on rebounds that are just rebounding fouls. You feel like that's complete discretion of the referee. Not always, but they were not obvious. And then some of the shooting fouls, there was just not a lot of contact there. Not surprising, the war on Tice has a big impact, but it wasn't maybe he's not playing as aggressive because he's in foul trouble, but it felt like Bam was just so much more athletic. And Bam said after game five that the reason they lost is because he had a shitty game. You know what? Bam is Kemba said after game, Bam's a star and he played one. He dominated Tice. And there's Grant had his moments where he played well, but you just can't rely on Grant Williams to play clutch minutes, then play the entire fourth quarter.
Yeah, I don't think you can really fault Brad Stevens for going back to Daniel Tice. He's been by far the best center all season long. It hasn't even really been close. He was fantastic as recently as game five. He's been the best answer for the Heat all series. So I know Grant had that stretch where he was really effective, and the switching was kind of slowed down the Heat for the only time the Celtics did it all game. But you can't get mad at Brad, I think, for going to Tice, back to Tice. But I do think, but
people will get mad at Brad.
And so it's the and one was kind of a shot. Like, I think Tice backed up a little too far, maybe, but like a Bam little floater runner thing, like that's kind of what you want him to shoot.
That's the
dunk wasn't good defense, but like Bam hit a bunch of shots that you just kind of tip your cap. Like the one, I think it was in the fourth quarter when he hit the back rim, it popped straight up, went back in. There were a few of those where it's like, okay, Bam's hitting jumpers and he can do that. If he ever becomes a great finisher, he's going to be such a problem. My goodness, because he can already play make. He's already a physical athlete. And if he ever becomes a more aggressive, better playmaker, he's going to be such a good player.
And like if he knocks down shots, like they showed the graphic from ESPN with his shot chart tonight, and like it was not a lot of stuff in the restricted area. He was getting a lot of like floaters and like jump shots in the paint. That's like kind of where you want to force Bam to take shots. If Bam's going to take shots, he was just very good. And then when he was started to get it going, they paid a lot of attention to him, and he was just very like the Heat with all the cutting they do. Bam did a great job of like just finding them. That led to like a lot of Jimmy Butler open layups. But I think like the biggest criticism from like besides kind of that play late is that the Celtics did have a lot of chances in this game, like smoking bunnies left and right. Like
so much bunny smoking, wide open bunnies.
Gordon Hayward,
some of their best finishers.
Yeah, and it was not good. Gordon Hayward, I don't know if he's hurt or he wasn't good tonight. It was just wasn't, other than the 2 3-pointers he made, I don't remember him doing positive things on the basketball court.
I feel bad for that guy because
he missed the birth of his son for this.
But first year he gets injured. Second year he's ineffective most of the year. Third year he gets injured just as the playoff run is happening, when he's playing really great basketball. He's
playing the best basketball of his Celtics
career.
And he
came back and he never was, whether it was because of the injury, because of the time off, because of whatever the reason was, he wasn't the Gordon Hayward that the Celtics had all season. He seemed a little hesitant. He was getting beat defensively pretty easily. He did not have a good series. He did not have a good game. And you really do feel bad for the guy because it's just like tough circumstances that it happened in the playoffs and he came back and just didn't have much to give.
No, and it really showed it, but like, I don't know what else you do. Kemba was also in foul trouble this game. You got to play your guys eventually. I mean, the Celtics pretty much went in this season or went in the playoffs, you knowing that they're going to have basically 6 or 7 guys. We knew that their bench depth was just not there. I mean, you saw Brad try to squeeze like a second rotation out of Cantor just to kind of survive. We saw a Time Lord.
The Cantor minutes was the one Stevens coaching decision that
You can't try it again. You can't try it again.
I was like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
But even that, it's like, I don't know. It felt like the first half of these games, I know this is like kind of a nonsense take, but like, the first half in the entire, like for every game in the series, didn't really feel like it mattered that much.
I mean, he was a minus 11 in 7.5 minutes of a game the Celtics lost by 12, even though they got pummeled down the stretch.
I'm not saying it was a good choice. He was clearly quite bad, but the Celtics were still took a lead and were up, and Cantor never touched the court in the second quarter. And I know
we gave him so much credit for playing well in game 5, and I did think he helped kind of pushed the Celtics offense back on track in that game. He was still barely a plus in that. Like, he played really well and was still not like this enormous, enormous plus. He didn't play as well tonight. And they were taking advantage of him with Andre Iguodala. Andre Iguodala, like the play where not just the threes, but then the dribble handoff with Tyler Hero, where he gets a roll and gets an easy dunk. No recovery. It's like you're giving up wide open roll dunks to Andre Iguodala. That just can't happen. And I do think Like, Grant Williams wasn't a bad option in this series. Robert Williams, I don't know what he did to get banished to the bench all series, but Brad never really trusted Robert Williams, and I know there are reasons for that, but you wonder if he could have given the Celtics more than Kanter did.
Well, like, Time Lord came into this game and had a pretty, like, big impact on the game. He made two consecutive stops that led to Celtics buckets in transition, but it felt like he never did anything to earn. It felt like Brad would only experiment with the backup bigs in the first half in this series, and then the second half is pretty much, let's shorten the rotation to six or seven, and you're never going to see Kanter, you're never going to see Time Lord. I don't know. He's still a little shaky on the defensive end in terms of his decision making, but he's so athletic and gives, like, changes things at the rim so much that you think it would have at least changed things or give the Heat a different look. But again, like, I just go back to, like, it was so quick how everything kind of unfolded and how the Celtics went from basically up by six to down by seven. Like, in the, it felt like 2 minutes of actual basketball. And so I don't know. It just, I don't know. They lost. It makes the big leads lost in game one and two, like, feel that much worse. I don't know why this game doesn't feel as bad as those two games, but maybe just because they had much bigger leads in the first two games. But the Celtics just didn't have enough. Like, they fought to the end. It's not like they gave up like the Kyrie series against Milwaukee. They just got thoroughly outplayed, and it's probably got to do with their body fat.
Yeah, I mean, they lost a 6-point lead in a
minute. But that doesn't mean anything anymore.
But then they got back up again, and it was just a massive, massive run for the Heat. Just a blitz. I don't know what it was about the fourth quarters. They just could not execute with Miami when it mattered most. And it happened all series long. I do think Brad going to the super small lineup, like, I think he kind of tried to do it out of desperation tonight.
That lineup just doesn't work if Gordon Hayward's not playing, like, at his best.
I'm not sure it works a lot in the first place, especially against a team that, like, takes care of the ball and values possession like the Heat do. Like, the one stretch that lineup did work was when Jaylen Brown had 19 steals in a row and they just kind of trampled the Heat. Otherwise, I don't know if that was ever an answer. There was never proof this season, except for that one stretch, that was a viable option. And Brad kept trying to play it in the playoffs. I don't blame him because it's his best five players and the backup center options were all not great. But that's a tough. I don't know what their plus minus was tonight. It wasn't good. They really, really struggled, it seemed like, defensively when they went to those lineups, except for that one burst at the end of the second half, was it? The first half of game three.
Yeah. The wild thing is, though, is, like, entering the playoffs, if you said the Celtics lose in the Eastern Conference Finals, you would be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. They kind of go out to potential. There's, like, more disappointment because you, like, they had the potential to win the game, and it's not who we expected. It's not them losing to one of the best, like, the MVP in the Bucks. But, like, Bam Adebayo just played phenomenal and was a big man. And me hand up writing, like, going into the season, I said the Celtics don't have a chance of winning the title this year because they just don't have the bigs to kind of compete. And I wrote that article basically thinking about Giannis and Joel Embiid in mind, but it turns out, like, the super talented big that they couldn't match up against was from the Miami Heat. And you do have to give them some credit for stepping up and kind of Bam just being much better basketball player than I had any idea. He's just very, very good. But, like, the Celtics, I don't know. Is it a disappointing season?
He is, like, your father.
Sam Jam Bam Packard is what they're going to call me now. But, like, crazy things just to, like, to come down to the bubble. It's been a full year. Like, I think Brad said that they started practicing for this season.
I need a vacation, man.
It's been wild. But is it, like, we can talk about this more, I guess, next week, because you probably have to go, right? But I don't even know. I can't think it's a bad season.
Let's keep chatting a little bit, Jam. It's a landmark. It's a landmark, not the kind of landmark any Celtics fans wanted, but this is a landmark. And I feel you when you wonder if this was a productive season, because I do think this was a title shot. And it was the first real title shot of the Brad Stevens era. And I think it's probably more frustrating for the Celtics to lose to the Heat, who I still think they're at least not good. Not that they're not good, but the Celtics are at least on the level of the Heat.
On paper, the Celtics have more talented players than the Miami Heat, but they don't have it at the right positions. Like, having a talented five is much more valuable than anyone. Like, the Celtics probably have too many wings. You can question the roster construction of having your best five lineup basically not being able to be effectively on the court. Like, that's probably not the best way to construct a team. As good as Daniel Theis was this year and kind of emerged as a kind of pretty underrated guy, it's just like, you probably want to have your best five guys be able to close in a game. And that's just never was the case for the Celtics this year.
Yeah. And I think a lot of things went right. And if you look at the way the roster is constructed, you'd think, okay, they get to the Eastern Conference Finals. They have Jason Tatum, who's 22, and Jaylen Brown, who's 23, probably as their best two players throughout the playoffs. And you think, okay, well, those guys gave away some games in crunch time. They're super young. They're going to be there in the future. It's totally understandable for them to go through those types of struggles in the playoffs, right? What isn't so understandable is to do it against a Heat team that has a lot of young guys too. It was like Tyler Hero doing it. He's a rookie. It was Duncan Robinson with 5 threes in game 6. He's effectively a rookie after playing mostly in the G League during his rookie season. It's Bam Adebayo, who he's a super young player too. So when you think about, like, it really was reasonable for the Celtics to have the problems that they did in the playoffs. It's just because of the matchup, because so many young guys on the Heat were doing it, and because, you know, next year the Nets are going to come back with Kyrie and KD healthy, and the Warriors are going to have a healthy roster again, and the Sixers may not be broken, and the Bucks will come back, and they're still going to be an Eastern Conference force as long as they keep Giannis. And so, and then the Heat, like, they're super young. They have flexibility to go out and pursue another guy, whether it's this summer or next. So when you think about all those things, even though the Celtics are young, even though Tatum has another level to reach and Jaylen has another level to reach, and a lot of these guys are only going to get better as they keep going, and it shouldn't be that tough to add to a bench that was pretty minimal. I think that it's okay to look at all those problems and be like, that's totally understandable for this group, but also realize this was a big missed opportunity for the Celtics in a year when the title was really wide open. And I don't know if it's as wide open as it seems sometimes, because the Lakers have been awesome, and the Lakers look very much like the title favorite, who are going to be very tough to beat in the finals. But like, the East, at least, was very wide open, and this was a swing and a miss in a year the Celtics could have had a chance at least to play the Lakers in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing just because it feels like they had the way they played at the end of the second half of Game 5 is like they had everything to the intangibles to kind of beat this Heat team, but it really did come down to choking away Games 1 and 2. And just kind of the struggles in Game 6, everything was there for the taking. You still think that, I mean, a team like the Lakers are just going to walk away with the NBA Finals, although I am officially stopping questioning Heat culture. But when you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, generally talent wins out, but who knows? Maybe a scrappy team with Eric Spoelstra, who's balding. People don't talk about that, but he's very bald. Maybe they do it. I don't know. They had the chances and they just like failed to execute. And I can't like, they try. I don't know. It's like they tried real hard. I hate to like come down to that, but it's like they just didn't really have it. I think there's like, you can have some built-in excuses from Hayward being hurt. I don't know how badly Kemba's knee was, but it didn't. I feel like I expected more from Kemba Walker, and I don't know how much of it is like, okay, this is Tatum's team down the stretch now because he's emerged as a star, but I feel like I've seen more dominant offensive performances from Kemba when he was a member of the Hornets, and actually earlier in the season where he was routinely getting like kind of 30-point games. We did not see that version of Kemba Walker in the playoffs, and it felt like they needed a closer, and without having kind of the dominant Kemba that it was basically all relying on Tatum, where sometimes he had it and sometimes he didn't. And so I don't know, like Kemba definitely wasn't going to make an excuse about his knee. He says as much after the game, but it didn't feel like, if you're going to have a roster construction of basically around these young guys, you bring in kind of the veterans like Hayward and like Kemba to kind of not make mistakes. And I just think both of those guys really like underperformed. It could be both the injuries, but I don't like want to give that excuse, but that's the kind of the roster construction is you have these two young growing stars for balance, for structure. You have the kind of savvier vets who are supposed to step up in these moments, but for whatever it was, Kemba never had like the dominant, he didn't have like a signature Kemba game or a game where Kemba, he took over, which we know he's more than capable of, but it just never occurred in this playoffs.
Yeah, and I wonder, I do think the knee was bothering him for sure. I don't know how much it bothered him. I don't know how much of it was just playing deep in the playoffs for the first time against two awesome coaches in Nick Nurse and Eric Spoelstra. And then the other part of it too is those teams played zones, a ton of zone defense. Like we've talked about before, the Celtics played more zone defense in a playoff run, I'm 100% positive, than any team in NBA history ever has. And so those defenses are designed to stop what Kemba Walker does, which is the high, you know, pull up three pointers off the pick and roll and break you down off the dribble and all that stuff. So I do think he was definitely hindered by the knee, but I also think like the Celtics need to figure out how to have him still be capable of those huge games that you were talking about while other teams are going to be in junk defenses. And that's going to be part of it. And Tatum is going to be their best player moving forward. Kemba, he needs to be a very good scorer, though.
He needs to be a catch-and-shoot three guy, which I just don't think he's ever been in his career, because he's always been the guy with the ball in his hands late. And it felt like, especially in this game, in Game 6, that he just didn't knock down open threes. He's capable of hitting them, but he was 3 of 10 from three tonight. And like, I think that's just not generally his game. But if Tatum's going to be the primary ball handler, and Tatum was fantastic tonight, Tatum had 24 and 11 assists, almost had a triple double with 7 rebounds. Like Tatum, if Tatum's going to be the main guy you want with the ball in your hands, Kemba's going to have to be a guy who can kind of spot up and shoot.
Yeah. And I think he probably learned too during this playoff run, he's got to extend his range. And I know, like, obviously you see Dame Lillard go out there and now he's shooting from the logo. You don't have to necessarily do that, but every foot behind the arc you can shoot from and shoot from comfortably without sacrificing your percentages, that's another attempt or two you can take a game. And that's an attempt or two that you can take with maybe a lesser contest than if you're always trying to get to the line. So I think that's going to be a big part of his offseason workout regimen, is just extending that range and getting to, you know, a few feet beyond the arc like a lot of the other top point guards do. And I know Kemba's kind of like a self-made shooter, so maybe that'll
What does that mean?
He wasn't like a natural shooter. Like Damian Lillard has probably always been a shooter his entire life. Kemba was just a break you down, get to the bucket guy until like year 3 in Charlotte. And I don't know how that will impact him as he tries to add range, if it will impact him at all. But that's definitely got to be a part of it. And I think for Tatum too, like, he's got to be better catch and shoot. I think the off the dribble stuff is stuff that's in his bag. That's going to be something that he can go to all the time. But when teams are going to junk it up and when teams are going to be in zone, like catch and shoot, like you said,
the entire team needs to be better catch and shoot. If they're
except Jalen, Jalen's actually a catch and shoot guy.
And occasionally Marcus, I don't know. Marcus Smart, he is what he is. 13 threes tonight, partly because that's the guy that the Heat want shooting threes. He's knocked down four of them, but it was pretty egregious in the first half, but like the Celtics,
he made some of them too when the Celtics were not playing any defense and needed buckets.
They only hit four threes in the second half, and the Celtics basically this entire year were built on in one games by volume 3-point shooting and knocking down at least like 40% of those threes. And they're just like, if you told me that the Celtics shot 32% from a three in a game, it's like, yeah, well, there's no chance they're going to win that. Like, that's just not how they've won games this entire season. And so if it's using a junk zone, and that's the crazy thing about the playoffs is like, the regular season, you're never going to get this much zone and you're going to be able to run your offense and kind of the matchup problems that the Celtics have. It's going to create a lot of opportunities to get good offense, but it's the beauty of the playoffs is like crazy things can come out and there's like specific matchups. And that
remember when we had your buddy Rick on the pod
and he's predicted,
and he said, he's like, you know what's going to be huge in the bubble? Zone defense. He told us that before the NBA even came back, how important zone defenses were going to be. I wonder how much the Celtics will put that into their repertoire moving forward, because sometimes it's just like, it's not even so much about the zone defense that you play, but just, okay, these guys are getting this look against pick and roll coverage. Let's just throw some junk at them and make them find something else. Take away the ways that they were getting those shots, those opportunities.
There was a play during this game where I think Time Lord was in the game, and I think they like switched to zone like mid play, and it looked like the Heat had like a wide open lane to the rim, but it just like it confused him and the Heat threw the ball away. And it is about like throwing different looks at things. I think there's a lot to learn from the Raptors series in that as well, as like using the regular season to be able to practice those zones so you can use them in the playoffs. Cause that's the thing about the Heat. Is like we saw them play their kind of funky zone with the forwards up, guards back in the regular season. That's something they're comfortable with.
That was like 7 years ago.
That was January. That was literally 8 months ago when the Seas went to Florida. But yeah, it's like that's something that they're probably going to have to put into the repertoire next year, is being able to just practice zones throughout the year and then implement it in the playoffs. It's wild how like much the NBA evolves and changes. Like, I would have never thought that like we'd be talking about, you know, the Celtics need to implement different wacky zones next year if they're going to want to compete at an elite level. But it's like the best teams, like that's how you slow down elite offensive teams, is giving them these different looks. And it's frustrating because it feels like they kind of got an answer to the zone in terms of like as the series went on, they did like a much better job of attacking it. But for whatever reason, it's just like when it came down to crunch time, like it's just like more thought had to go into it. It's just not something they were like ever seemed extremely comfortable with. It seems like they had to like remind themselves every single time, okay, like send a guy to the middle and then they get down seven. And it's like, we forgot all of those principles. Let's pass the ball around until Kemba takes a semi-contested three.
So much zone defense.
We're in the zone.
It seemed like every game we were talking about zone defense, one or the other. Like whether they beat it, whether they didn't beat it, it was every game, the last two series, box and ones, three,
triangles
two,
and twos.
Two, three, triangle and two. What the hell? 2020 is a wild year, man. It is a wild freaking year. You want to do 2 6-packs tonight, one from the game and one from the season?
Oh, boy. I don't know if I'm prepared to do one from the season.
I'm not either. Not at all. But let's do it.
No, let's save that. We got to spill some content later in the week. What are we going to talk about on Tuesday?
We got it. we got everything to talk about on Tuesday, the entire offseason to lay out and discuss and get into. Right now, we're doing double six pack for the people.
All right, let's do start off with today's game, Mr. Fucking just going for it, 12 packing it. What's your first pick from today? Pick? Yeah, if you're going to throw me on the spot right now, I have to think back for the entire season.
Marcus Smart's absurd finish. The absurd finish where they had the slow-mo, and I have no clue how he even shot it. I think it was on Dragic, right? And they showed the slow-mo, and he was like going and forth and kind of
falling
backwards
to the ground. Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a wild shot, but it went in. I enjoyed the slow-mo. That was one of the times when slow-mo really, really gave you the degree of difficulty.
That's a good one. I'm going to go with the Time Lord stretch where he checked in and just completely changed the game. Knocked down a three in transition after changing Jimmy floater, then protects the rim. Kemba hits a step back three.
Hold on. Time Lord knocked down a three in transition?
No, he changed the Jimmy floater, and then Tatum knocked down a three in transition. Okay. Then he protected the rim. I don't know. Like I'm trying to remember other moments in this game that were cool. The Jaylen Brown domination series where he got clipped.
Hold on. Is this a pick? What are you doing right now?
This is my second pick.
Officially?
Officially.
Okay.
The Jaylen Brown attacking domination series where he just got the steal, got clipped by Jimmy Butler, which was absolutely should have been called a foul. You're just not allowed to do that. And Jaylen has this thing. I think he did it multiple times this series where he falls down and immediately acts like his leg is completely blown out.
I thought he had a bad injury when he went down right there.
But it's the second. Am I wrong? It's the second time he's done that, and then just kind of pops back up and like wins.
He was working on the leg over on the side. I'm gonna give him credit.
I think he was legitimately hurt, but it was like still like, oh no, that's like he tore his ACL or something. But to then come back and then basically just foul the shit out of Tyler Hero and get another dunk was pretty cool.
That was a good stretch. I'm going to Grant Williams, just Grant Williams in general. He was a key contributor to the only effective stretch of Celtics defense in the entirety of game six. I thought he did a nice job. He stripped Bam one of the few times that Bam wasn't just dominating. So Grant Williams, salute to him. It was a solid stint for him.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And then my second one. What's my second one?
Your third one, bro.
Yeah, third one overall. I'm going with... I thought about going with the war on Tice because it never ended. But I'm going with what am I going with?
And you wanted to do a potable 12 pack.
Yeah, well the whole season's easier. I'm going with the way that the Celtics all sounded after the loss. Like Kemba was like, I don't have any regrets. We played hard all season. Tatum was like, yeah, you know, we had so much fun together. Everybody just loved this team. And obviously it was a frustrating conference finals series and a lot went wrong.
Remarkably different feel from the end of last year
when Terry Rozier was just lighting up everybody and everybody
Brad was like, we just like Brad that team like, over there has
that
championship
team over there? Yeah, they're way fucking better than we are. They've got championship habits. I got a bunch of fucking morons. So yeah, Brad was asked about regrets and said he regretted the outcome, but doesn't regret anything they put in. That's a classic Zen master quote, or a Kaizen master quote. What else was said in there? It was just a bunch of guys who liked this team a whole lot. And I mean, it's easy to forget that because of how the last series went and because they kind of fell apart down the stretch of a lot of those games. But this season was unexpected. This season was, I mean, they lost Kyrie, they lost Horford, they came with Daniel Tice, who was their third string center at the time, as their starter. Nobody thought the Celtics were going to be as good as they were. They got good enough that people thought they had more talent in the Eastern Conference Finals than their opponents. So
some people might still think that.
Some people might still think that. It's true. So it was this. They liked each other this year. They didn't hate each other. So that was a good thing.
That's a positive. My honorable mention for my final pick is going to go to Tyler Hero, just for being, he had this runner off 1 foot, like a floater from the foul line. It's just like the cockiness that you must have to take that shot and then just to drain it, like the net doesn't move. I was just like, I'm very impressed by that player. Like, he's just good. And so just that
he's
shot,
a swaggy dude.
That shot,
I don't even like the word swaggy, but that motherfucker,
that man has it. That man has it. Like, and I gotta give credit to, like, that. I was just impressed by that. But for my final pick, is just going to be Jason Tatum's inability to score points in the first quarter. It makes no sense. It's something that ideally would change moving forward, because first quarter points count as much as the other quarters. Like, he still finished the game with a double-double and 7 boards and 24 points. But, like, for why he just did not score first quarter points in the games 4, 5, and 6. It's unexplainable. It just doesn't make it. I don't know why, but it happened.
It did. All right. Now 6 back from the entire season. I'll give you the first pick.
This is so tough. But I think the war on Tice is going to be like one of the things I remember the most. Like, it was comical that we got like so much. Like, Mike Gorman started referring to the war on Tice. He started making a joke out about it every single broadcast. It was consistent. Tice fouled out of so many games. Tice's face, just the pure rage in his face when he gets called for a questionable foul, was fantastic. The memes, I think it's like one of the biggest memories of this year.
Tatum's rise.
That was going to be my next pick. Damn it.
That was pretty easy pick. I mean, it's easy to forget that he started this season very inefficiently, and it was sort of a continuation of,
he couldn't make a layup.
What happened in his second year
last October?
Couldn't make a layup. Had like some 2 for 17, 2 for 18 type games. Was just not looking particularly good. And then all of a sudden, it's like the middle of January.
It's as soon as he was named an All-Star. He's just like
the middle of January.
It can't even snap, bro. There you go.
Please. I was snapping that whole time, but I just had it in front of the mic so you couldn't hear me. But he made the All-Star team when he was mostly inefficient, which is a testament to how damn talented he is. But then he just kind of hit the turbo button on his season, and the rest of the way was special. I mean, for a third year, what he did in the playoffs, and it, like I said, it's easy to overlook what he did during the playoffs because of some of the fourth quarter issues that the whole team had, because some of the, you know, first quarters he went scoreless, like you said. But the jump that he took from missing layups and being inefficient for like 1 1/4 seasons straight to all of a sudden being efficient number one option while also being a plus defender and averaging like 27, 28 points per game, just a crazy, crazy in-season leap that I knew he was going to be really good, but his improvement this year was just eye-opening.
His stretch, like there's three games that stick out to me, is like both games against the Clippers and then the game in Los Angeles against the Lakers where they still end up losing, but it was like Tatum versus LeBron. He is the like best, like Tatum was the best player on the court, and just like it was wild, but like he was just prime time, Jason Tatum, I have arrived. I'm a goddamn legend. I'm 22 years old. It was, those games are the ones that stick out the most to me from like kind of the ascendance of Tatum.
Kemba Walker's smile is my next pick. That man is
you're a big softy.
He's a smiley dude. Just, and I pick it because obviously like that's just kind of how he plays. I think he said at one point this season, he doesn't play well if he gets mad, or he doesn't think you could play the game of basketball when you get mad. Some guys would disagree with that, but Kemba is just always smiling. Even when he complains to referees, he's smiling.
He gets like angry for a second, then he runs back down the court and is just all cheesing. Like it's wild.
He's all cheesing. And I think his mentality, his mindset was huge for the Celtics this season. And when Tatum grabbed the torch, like he just gave it to him. He pushed it away, wanted Tatum to be the best player on the team, wanted Jaylen Brown to excel, wanted everybody else around him to be great. And I think that that's part of why those guys were so good. And so I picked Kemba Walker's smile just because it was a goofy pick.
But it's a good one.
I do think it's also, you know, symbolic of the impact that he had on what was a broken ass locker room last season, and had none of those issues until game two of the Eastern Conference Finals this year.
I'm going to go with Marcus Smart. I love him and I trust him. Just that thing emerged, but like the memory of all those threes he hit against the 76ers is just absolute. Was that the Sixers or the Raptors? I don't even remember. This is my memory. It was Raptors game two against the Raptors.
Game two against the Raptors, yeah.
Where he just came out and it's like you have to love what he does for Celtics and you have to trust him because he can do that. He emerged like at some point he was a top five off the dribble 3-point shooter in the league this year. Like he's just gotten consistently better, and just the crazy, insane, impacting, winning plays. Like he's exactly who you'd want on the court. You'd probably. People get upset with me because they accuse me of not criticizing Marcus Smart enough, but like you kind of have to live with the nonsense he does because he cares so much, and just the grifting, the grift off against Lowry. That's just like the epic series of against the Raptors was fantastic. But I think game two was the epitome of just loving and trusting Marcus Smart, where it's just like you just kind of laugh. And it takes me back to all – what was the game where he shot – what was that, 11 – made 11 three-pointers?
That was the Phoenix game. Yeah. That was this season.
That was this year, yeah.
Like, that was like at least four decades ago.
That game, I think Bontemps was missing, so I managed to sneak down to the real press row and sat between you and Corrales, and hearing you just – cackle after every time he would attempt a three is going to be a big fun memory, and that's the that's the Marcus Smart experience.
Yeah, that was a special. I mean, he made 11 threes. Didn't he take 20 something?
Yeah, he took 11 threes in like the first quarter.
that was a fun night. And I for the people who don't know, when I watch Marcus Smart take ambitious threes, I enjoy it. Good if they go in, if they miss, I'm a huge fan. Huge, huge fan. Just because it's entertainment. And so yes, that night there was cackling in the press box. What you got next?
That's a good question. This is not gonna be my final pick, but it's definitely honorable mention.
Okay.
Javonte Green's just jumping ability. That guy is like, I don't think he can be in the top six, but man, can that guy jump.
That guy,
he jumps high, he jumps long. He's just one of the best jumpers I've ever seen.
Then he jumps, it's like he's a quick jumper.
Fast like, jumper.
Yeah. That man can really, really fly.
Oh, this is a great, another honorable mention. Glad you clicked on it. But Grant Williams hitting that first three after starting 0-for-22 to open his 0-for-25.
Career. 0-for-25.
Damn. And then to him, like, to rebound in the playoffs and then knock down his, like, first five threes or whatever it was. Just the wild ride that was Grant Williams' three-point shooting this year. Another honorable mention I'm just going to be is just the Enes Kanter experience. How upset people would get anytime he'd be in the game. It's just like the full meltdown of Celtics Twitter.
The online angst during every Kanter stretch was fantastic.
He's the king of I was trying to think of how to phrase this, but like if you smoke a bunny, you want Enes Kanter underneath the basket right there, like the easy offensive rebound putback. Sure, he might smoke that bunny right again, but he's going to get that rebound and then put it back himself. The amount of times he went down the court and had three offensive rebounds and one field goal in like a solid possession is just was fun. And then the pure rage I felt anytime someone attacked him in a pick and roll and just like knocked down a jumper. I still have like the image of Josh Richardson just burned into my head of that
from
one
opening
game.
Night.
Yeah. Where it's like Kanter was like immediately, he's like, you knew coming in that he was going to be a defensive liability. It was opening night. And it's like, God damn it. And then just him in the locker room, just he's just such a ham, just a camera whore. It's funny. Like, it's like ridiculous. Like, just calling like reporters over, like, why didn't you tweet me, like tweet about this story? He's just a wild, wild ride. And just to end with him being just fantastic tan, the Enes Kanter experience has to be an honorable mention. Not my final pick though. My final pick, and I'm glad we talked through this because this part of my process, Vinny Sexpants. Vincent Poirier shows up with just the most outrageous things, and I call him Vinny Sexpants, and someone calls him it on Twitter, I think Jared Weiss, and then he starts calling himself Vinny Sexpants, gets surgery on his finger, immediately posts on Twitter a picture of him in a cast with the caption Vinny Sexfinger. Like,
yeah, he took your outrageous nickname to another level
and made it so much grosser and like so much weirder. And it's like something that Vinny Sexpants would have to say. But yeah, I mean, I think that has to be my final. I completely forgot about that because Vinny was not much of an impact on the court, we'll say. But like for that to blossom this year is fantastic.
Now I have to pick.
Track through some honorable mentions. It helped my process. This one's a good one from Coil 24. Remember Tice's block on the end, Trey Young in the Hawks game where he just played the best one-on-one defense you ever seen a big man play?
Yep. Yeah. Watch the games. B1 said Brad hyping up the crowd before inserting Taco has to be an honorable mention.
We haven't even mentioned Taco Fall, but the Taco Mania experience is pretty wild where he was the new Geno. And people would go, remember live basketball with crowds in
that games? That was crazy. But crowds loved Taco. Crowds lived for Taco. Summer League, Taco was the star of the entire Summer League. It was Zion, like, here, and Taco, like, way up here. and Zion was the most hyped rookie since probably LeBron. It was just electric. Every Taco experience was electric. I felt bad for him at first because I thought people were kind of treating him like a freak, but he's such a good dude about it all, and he's so nice about it all that it's just kind of heartwarming how much he embraced it and how much like
how much his teammates were like chanting, "We want Taco," and like they wanted to get him in the game too.
I think it went from something that was like people sort of mocking him to everyone actually fell in love with Taco Fall. Or maybe they always loved Taco Fall in the first place, but they all certainly love Taco Fall now. The Taco ride was fantastic. Another honorable mention, preseason Carson Edwards. That one quarter against Cleveland was incredible.
Shout out to Aziz, who does our pregame, our intro. Carson Edwards was so good that he got – like his own bars on the intro, and then it's just not been relevant ever since.
yeah, that poor intro. Aziz is an incredible rapper, one of my good friends, a brother to me, but he got duped by preseason Carson Edwards.
A meaty thigh is Carson Edwards.
he really got duped.
And Carson Edwards just wearing the shortest shorts possible. I mean, that's trying to bring back that look. So it's fantastic.
I also think Brad Wanamaker is
so solid,
becoming
so
a key contributor. That's like one of the overlooked cool things about this season was that itself. Like Brad Wanamaker played for years overseas. He wasn't a huge college star at all. Just a tough dude from Philly who grinded and grinded and grinded to get his chance. Then barely got a chance as a rookie, like a 29-year-old rookie, whatever he was, even though the Celtics were falling apart around him. And then he came back and was just pretty good all season long.
Just solid contributor.
Yeah, just kind of seized the opportunity. And so I think that was really cool for a guy who fought so long to make the NBA and then finally got a real chance in the NBA. Like he was, after 1 year, he was borderline NBA. Probably if he didn't have a good year this year, might have gone back to overseas, but he's an NBA player. He proved it, had some good years, or had a lot of really solid, sturdy games. Never really passed in transition, but that was part of the fun.
But he was very good at like getting to the rim. Like he's one of the best drivers on the team, and just like, and like the hesitation kind of layup of just, he's quite good at it. So I don't think I can justify that Brad Wanamaker being your final pick. So I'm going to make you do one more.
No, that was honorable mention. My final pick, the entire Jaylen Brown experience. We haven't even talked about him yet, which is, it kind of epitomizes the year that he had. He was really good, really efficient from the start. He never really got much credit for it because first it was Kemba coming in to a new team. Then it was Jason Tatum becoming the superstar. And all along, it was just Jaylen Brown getting better and playing well.
Attacking off the dribble, like that was the most effective Celtics offense for many points in this series. But like that emerged this year of, oh, Jaylen Brown's can drive left. Jaylen Brown can do some dribble moves in the lane.
Jaylen Brown once in a while like throws an up fake and relies on patience near the rim rather than sheer athleticism. The expansion of his game was really, really impressive. And because of the situation, because of Walker, because of Tatum, because of all the other things that were worthy of writing stories about, Jaylen was just kind of kept going under the radar. And then you add all the social justice stuff that he's done and the voice that he had throughout the playoffs in the bubble, driving 15 hours to
basically emerging as like
protest near his hometown in Atlanta.
He's like emerges like the voice of like, it feels like the players,
the voice of progress.
Yeah. And it's like him stepping up in the players only meeting after the Bucks went on the strike and being like, people were upset that the Bucks didn't warn them. He's like, no, fuck that. They did what they believed in and we should be supporting them. Like, that's very cool. He's definitely going to have a voice, like probably going to be like head of the union or something like that moving forward. It's going to be, he's just had like tremendous growth as, and it's like, he's had like very profound comments and very thoughtful comments throughout this entire process. But he's also like self-aware, which I very much appreciate, where he's like, I'm 23 and a basketball player. You guys shouldn't necessarily be looking to me for all the answers, but it's sad, like, and it's kind of messed up that you do. But like, I don't know, I just felt like he was very present and aware in the moments. And it's just like wise beyond his years and something that like I could have never done. And probably it's just very impressed by him as a human being, beyond all the growth as a basketball player.
And I think he's always wanted to have that voice, but I felt like he really grew into it and kind of lived up to the moment where everyone needed to hear that stuff. And he was about that. He's been about that from the start, but I think his voice just grew more and more powerful the more he spoke about it and like the whole Jalen experience. And I thought even game six, like no matter what went wrong for the Celtics this year, Jalen could always be counted on to just kind of keep trudging along. And that's kind of been him throughout his Celtics career. And he doesn't get as much credit for it as Smart. And like Smart deserves all the defensive credit he gets, all the credit for his toughness that he gets. But a lot of the times when the Celtics are wobbly, it's Jalen with like some surge of energy, surge to the bucket, steal that kind of revitalizes them. And so I don't think I credit him enough for the improvements he made this year. I don't think a lot of people credit him enough for the improvements he made this year, but he just really, really had an impressive year. And he and Tatum together, they're the best wing duo, the best young wing duo in the league. And
we'll be moving forward for the Celtics. We're coming up on the hour mark, so we got to wrap this up. But I got one more bonus pick for this.
Yes.
Anything is possible. I mean, this is our first year. It's been a long year, but we came on the scene and it was just instantly magic. I mean, sure, we got a lot of reps in from our Locked On Celtics day, but I thought we grew with the podcast. I think there's some stretch there is in the middle where we kind of turned into a bickering couple. But we worked the things out. I think we got our chemistry now. We started doing live on. I think actually when we pivoted to video, we got much better.
My dad at once asked me, he's like, is everything okay between you and Jam? You guys have been arguing a lot on the podcast.
Like, there was a stretch there. We're just at each other's throats. But you know what? Like, we see that the teams do that. Sometimes you got to yell it out, but
yeah,
now we're golden. And our great interview series of all of the media members during the quarantine, you know, we just kept it going. And then we just been coming live on Periscope. We Kaizen this. We have been getting better as it's going on. And so have the fans. All the people who are in the chats and sending in questions have been like, shout outs to you guys. It's been super thankful and cool to kind of be able to share this experience with you guys. And there's a lot of memories that they even brought up when trying to do it now that like I wouldn't have remembered, but the listener gods have been fantastic this entire year.
Absolutely awesome. Yeah, it's been a fun ride. Like, I mean, when we first started this show, neither of us had ever really hosted the show because Corrales was always in charge and Corrales is great at that. So we both had to grow. You took over the reins as the host. You just kind of Jason Tatum'd me out of the way. I just had to be Kemba Walker, just taking a step back and allowing you to thrive and step into the role that you deserved.
thank you for being Kemba to my Jason Tatum.
Yeah, and so yeah, I mean it's been a cool run. We had a podcast when there was nothing going on for months. I don't even remember what the fuck we talked about.
We just started talking to our friends in the Celtics media and just be like, so how'd you get here?
Yeah. I mean, it was a fun run. It was an entertaining team to cover, to talk about. And we'll be here all off season long. We probably won't do every single day, but we'll figure out a schedule. We'll let you guys know what the schedule will be. And now
we got a draft coming up. We got free agency. Celtics got three picks. Like I got to start learning about draft players, which is never fun because I don't know these things, but we'll have draft guys on. They'll have smart things, but that's the crazy thing about basketball is that it never stops. And we're neither does the podcast. We'll never stop. And hopefully you guys never stop listening to us.
Before we go, I can tell you're getting ready for the sign off. That's a veteran move by me. The people want to know what's the recipe for a 2021 title, Jam. They need you to tell them that it's possible, why it's going to happen. Just like when things went wrong during series, you were there as the guy to provide a blueprint for the future. Now Celtics are out this year, but next year,
I mean, they got to the Eastern Conference Finals with you're going to expect, think about how much better Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. We just talked about how much they improved over the course of 1 year. I don't know if they're going to have that much growth, but it's a growth-based organization. It's all about incremental progress. It is about Kaizen. You have to imagine their two foundational stars are going to improve and get that much better. Not to mention you're going to have a much more seasoned we talked about the bench depth lacking this entire year. We basically got nothing from Romeo Langford the entire year. I think he has a chance to become a more impactful player, give them something off the bench. You're going to have better moments from Grant Williams, better moments from Robert Williams. I don't know. I think we'll definitely talk about this moving forward. Contract year for Gordon Hayward. I'm assuming he's going to opt in. Expiring contract could be either Gordon Hayward playing for that money and we get great Gordon Hayward like we got this year, or could be a piece that you trade. But you have the foundation. You have the foundation there of the two best young wings in the league. Kemba Walker is still only 30 years old. It's not like he's going to have a downfall. The foundation is placed. It's part of the reason that it makes this year so frustrating is because they're so close and had the chances. But if you're this close and you have the young core coming back, I mean, they should be in the Eastern Conference Finals next year. It's going to be a harder road. It's going to be tougher, but Jason Tatum's an all-NBA player now. You can only expect him to get better. Jaylen Brown's going to get better. He's gotten better his entire career. The bench is going to improve. Everything's going to get better. Live basketball is probably going to return. I mean, what more can you ask for? The Celtics are a contender and will be a contender as long as they have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum on their team. As soon as the Tatum contract is inked, like that, you have that locked in for the next 4 years. You don't even have to focus on 2021. We're talking about 2021 through 2024. The Celtics will be a title contender because those two guys are that good and they're going to continue to get better.
Boom. Boom.
And you want to know why? You know, another reason, like, why, like, you have to have hope moving forward?
Because anything is possible.
That was corny as fuck.
That was corny.